Long Talk Radio.
Remind everyone before we get into the conversation tonight, the call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399. And for those who are joining us in the chat room, please be patient with me. I have to sign in. Normally my sister Denise does that, and she's going to be joining the call a little later. So therefore, we'll have the beauty news at the end of the show tonight. I wanted to make sure, Santara, are you on the line?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
So before we start, yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Before we start, I just kind of wanted to, here's my sister. She's joining us right now. I'll bring her in. Okay, so I have my sister on the line. I'm just going to briefly just tell everyone's name that's on the panel tonight, and if you guys want to introduce yourself, feel free to. If you don't want to, you don't have to. But tonight we have joining us Marietta Carter Narcisse, who's no stranger to this show, Danielle Blount.
That's right.
Danielle Blount, who's better known as Danny B Beauty on Twitter.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Yolande Johnson. And then Sarah Casamajor. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm getting a lot of feedback. I can't hear you really well. I'm having a lot of feedback.
Did you say that, Santara?
Yes, I was getting on my end. It's feeding the background, someone's background. That's
I'm at a party, so. I'm at a party, but you know, I couldn't miss the call, and so I kind of grabbed a chair and trying to find a place that's quiet.
I love it.
I am at a first anniversary makeup school party, so it's like everybody's dressed like Barbie. But it's kind of Barbie themed, so it's like you know.
or maybe what you could do, Marietta, is mute your phone until you get ready to speak.
Maybe
might help. Okay. Also, Denise, you can do the reading news at the end of the show. I just made that announcement. I guess you can't hear me. Okay. Well, we're going to start the show, but first.
I can hear you. I put it on mute, but I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me when I put it on mute.
Yeah, I can still hear you speaking. We can't hear the music anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can't hear the music anymore. The first item I want to discuss tonight, and I don't know if any of you heard the show last week, but we had the ladies from the MAACD campaign, and what that is the Makeup Artists Against Colors Discrimination or Complexion Discrimination. And it's a campaign to address colorism issues within the Black and Latin communities and everyone in between, as well as the lack of recognition from top cosmetic companies. And they're saying that as Black women and as makeup artists, they've become tired of supporting those brands that don't support us. So basically what I wanted to know from you all, whether you heard the show or not, I wanted to know how you felt about supporting cosmetic brands that don't support us. And what they meant by that was that, you know, there are all these cosmetic brands out there that cater to everybody but women of color. And they're saying that, you know, they have a certain select number of shades, for instance, foundations in particular. They have a certain select, you know, number of shades. But, you know, when it comes to women of color, it may stop at, like, let's say a shade that's equivalent to Beyonce's skin tone. And so what they propose is that we stop supporting them altogether. And then there we had a caller who called last week toward the end of the show who kind of raised a couple of great points, which is some things that I was actually thinking as well. It's like, you know, there are brands out there that cater to women of color that don't necessarily cater to Caucasian women. So some people want to know, what's the big deal? Why is this a big issue? So do you all, any of you have any thoughts on any of that? And just kind of say who you are first, so we'll know who's speaking. Wow.
Wow.
Don't all speak at once.
Speaking.
Well, okay. Who's going? Who's that?
I'll go first. Oh. This is Antara.
Okay.
Being in the New England territory, I'll say the New England territory, I'm in Massachusetts, and I've worked in the stores with the brands, and there was we're always less in number in the department. But I think having grown up in the territory, what you learn as an artist, to separate working on a counter versus being an artist, what that did for me coming out of this territory is I had to become a scientist. I had to create what worked for me. Prescriptives became huge here because all the women of color, whether they were African-American, we have a very large Indian population, which, you know, the coloring is different. They could go and spend the money. So we learned to understand mixing mediums and putting things together. So from an artist's perspective, I think that just kind of strengthened a lot of us on this end, because even artists that I've worked with that were women of color, they mixed a lot when they worked on clients. That was just what happened in this territory, because people just aren't marketing to us. And I think in 94, I actually, when I worked on my degree, I had to write a paper, and my thesis was actually written on the rise of more cosmetic companies that were creating for women of color. And, you know, I remember writing about Fashion Fair and Naomi Sims being basically, and Florrie Roberts being at the forefront at that time. This was 94. And then there were a couple, like there was Paramiti, which no one knows where that went, but they were kind of coming up, creating for women of color, more to Latinas and things like that. So, you know, even being in the industry, I've been in the industry for a while now, it's still the same. I can say when I wrote my thesis in 94, there none of those companies are further than they were then, you know, even starting or being at the forefront. And those were at the forefront have kind of fallen behind. I mean, there is no Florrie Roberts anymore. And Fashion Fair, you know, no one really pays them any attention. So it's all about the buyers and what they're looking for, because we know it's all about dollar. That's just, you know, that's what I've seen living in this territory. Everybody
goes, Santara. This is Denise. So, you know, after listening to, you know, all that you're saying, I guess my question to you is, still, does it really matter that they don't cater to women of color? Like, I just think that there are so many options that why are we looking to those companies anyway?
Right.
I think every woman should realize that maybe there's not one particular color out there for her anyway, so all have to do what you say and become scientists and start mixing one or two colors together to get an exact match for ourselves. So if we do that, why does it matter anyway that they don't cater to us? Just find
right.
whoever does.
I agree. I agree. I'm going to buy what I like. I'm going
right.
to buy what I like. And I think it's because we grew, you know, I grew up, my mom wore makeup. She mixed whatever she needed to mix. You know, I grew up watching the women in my life mixing. So that's normal for me.
Any other thoughts?
This is Danielle, and I was going to comment on this. I kind of play devil's advocate as it relates to the different brands and lines that are out there. And, again, Denise brought up a valid point. At the end of the day, it's up to the consumer, you know, what they want to buy. And the interesting thing about this is African-Americans have the largest purchasing power. We spend billions and billions of dollars on things that we want every day. And it's up to us to say, okay, there are brands out there that do support women of color, and then there are some brands out there that have existed and their goal was not to attract us. So at the end of the day, you have to really commit to saying, I need to go to a brand that supports, you know, women of color because that's what I need. And at the end of the day, not everybody will go to one counter and find just that magical product that's going to, you know, just supply all of their needs. But at the end of the day, it's a personal decision. You know, how strong do you feel about supporting black-owned businesses? How, you know, how supportive are you going to be about those lines that carry products that are catered to you versus just, you know, those businesses that are out there that are following this wave of trend and saying, well, this is what's hot now, and hopefully you fit in to that mold.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree.
Marietta.
Can you hear me? I took it off.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
I can hear you now. What are you? Yeah, I can hear you now.
You know, it's hard. It's a hard call because, I mean, it's 2011 and we still have difficulty finding colors in mainstream lines.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I mean, you look at lines like Lancome and, you know, they have a few, what they call the hit pigments, the more pigmented colors. And those are a few to cater to darker skin tones. But if you go within the general line, you'll find that a lot of the colors are not pigmented enough to do with darker skin tones.
Exactly.
And same with Estee Lauder. The colors, and matter of fact, with most of the brands that cater to mainstream America, aren't pigmented enough. They look dark. Please, I apologize for the noise in the background. They look dark, and they look like they're pigmented, but when you put them on dark skin, they disappear, or you have to put layer after layer after layer after layer after layer after layer.
Right.
In order to build up the color, and it's like a real frustrating process. Even with the foundations, it's tricky with the foundations still.
Mm-hmm.
It's hit and miss. A lot of the lines, there are a lot of private label lines out there that do hit more the darker skin tones, but again, they're in limited access to the general population, you know. You have, like, the mass market lines, like Black Opal. Black Opal has a really great range.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky. They a lot of things just aren't marketed for us. So, I mean, we'll be boycotting a lot of stuff, really.
Yeah. This is Yolande. I was along the same line as Marietta. You know, we have so many different colors just in women of color, period. I mean, our undertones, some have dark spots, some have red, some have, you know, we have all different kind of things going on with our skin. So to actually find something that is going to even out your skin tone, period, alone.
It's hard for a lot of us to find things out of one bottle.
Mm-hmm. It's very hard.
Danny
made a good point about when she said we hold a purchasing power. And I think being on the flip side of that, behind the scenes, we do hold a purchasing power, but look where we let that power lie.
Mm-hmm.
Our purchasing power
Absolutely.
Is in hair. We
Yeah,
we
but we don't even own that.
Millions.
Right.
Right. And so,
yeah, but that's supporting the Korean market.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look where
right.
we allow our dollars to lie when you look at that. And then when you look at when that customer comes and they want to buy, what is the first thing that they buy? If you look at that age range of women between, say, 25 and 45 that walk to a counter, they don't first make a foundation purchase. They go for color, typically
a lip gloss.
And that's $16. You know, that's anywhere from $12 to $18 at a counter. Some of them won't do that. They go into the department store. So you're looking at those dollars. So if we're spending, if we're part of a multi-million dollar flow just in African-American women, and the larger percentage is color, then there's a fault in education. Because why aren't women comfortable enough? Yes,
I will say this. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ms. Yolande. I will say this. Hats off, really, to Carol's daughter, because in the beginning, that's what she started off doing, was for women of color, you know, to hydrate our skin and make our skin softer. And then as her brand grew, you know, of course, she had to branch out. And with that alone, if we had some of the clients that we all have worked with over the years, with that type of support and that type of marketing where it could actually get out there and it could show a range of different things that it could do. I mean, you know, we could all come up with a line.
Right, right. Absolutely.
I mean, I didn't have to hear the show last week. So what are they suggesting, that we boycott? What do we boycott?
Well, what they're suggesting is, and I'm looking at their site right now.
What was that about the boycott?
She's talking about the MAACD campaign, and she's wondering what is it that they're suggesting that we do.
Oh, can I just go back for a second to one thing Centaur said about African American women, you know, purchasing color. I think that was such a great point, because for me, I guess right there is why I don't really understand.
Hello? Yeah,
Hello?
We're here.
Oh, I didn't hear you. It disappeared.
Is she still here?
You were saying something and then it disappeared.
I think her call. Okay, here she goes. She's back on. Okay, you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. I was saying, I think that's why I can't be really passionate about this whole cause, because we're not buying foundation anyway. So I guess I'm still kind of not understanding, you know, what we're fighting for.
Right, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, again, what they're suggesting is basically that you don't support a brand that doesn't offer or even try to offer colors and products for us. You know, did they have a suggestion
for which brand?
Right, or are they saying, if you are the shade of someone like Beyonce, do I not boycott because they have my shade? I mean, where do we draw the line as to who we boycott or what brand we say we're not going to support if it fits my need? And I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
I totally agree with you, because, I mean, I worked for Lancome for a long time, and I had women come in that were really dark complexed. Lancome stops off at me, you know? Lancome stops off, even though they have some darker shades, the darker shades don't necessarily address the needs of the skin tones that would come in looking for something to match their complexion. So in my, you know, I'm like Honest Thomas. So when you come to the counter and you're looking for a foundation, I'm going to tell you point blank, I don't have a foundation that's matching your skin tone. It's not going to look right. So go around the corner to Dillard's and see if you find something that matches you.
You know, it's so funny that you said that because I explained to them last week. And I will say, though, in their defense, they made some valid points. But the way I'm looking at it, it's, there's not many things you can do about it. Just move on to something else. But, you know, but their campaign also deals with colorism issues and not just, you know, foundation at the, you know, at the makeup counter. But it also deals with colorism issues. But this issue with
what
the,
do you mean? What do you mean
colorism
issue? What do you mean?
They're talking about complexion discrimination and being discriminated because of your complexion. And the
that's racism in America. Hello.
Well, you know, this is the point that they were trying to make. And, that, you know, that's one of the things in their campaign they want to do. They want to go around to middle and high school kids, you know, trying to raise awareness about colorism and about educating, you know, the community, you know, on that type of issue.
That's a talk. That's a talk on racism. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about color in America. What I mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about color in America. I mean, if that's what you're talking about, I mean, it's we got a black president. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is Yolande. At the end of the day, you know, if we all know, if you want it, you got to go get it. That's just where it is. You know what I'm saying? So at this point, you know. Boycott, okay, fine. But at the end of the day, if you want it to change, you have to do the changing. So that group, that organization, I mean, you know, they should come out with a cosmetic line and, you know, we might all use it. Who knows? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if they want the change, you have to change it within yourself. That's the only way it's going
to
work.
And if you want to change, I say you want to promote, like, healthy race discussions.
Yeah.
Healthy race discussions, you know. I mean, complexion discrimination has been going on for years within households, okay? Light skin, dark skin, and within the same household.
Exactly.
You only like the light skin children. You don't like the dark skin children. The light skin children got curly hair. The dark skin children got kinky hair. Come on. That's been going on in households for a long time. So I say, if you want to do that, let's have healthy discussions.
Yeah.
Educate about that, you know. But what are we boycotting? There's nothing to boycott.
Basically.
Right, exactly.
And just like Yolanda said, they do plan on eventually, at later down the road, they said, to create their own brand.
Who are these people, anyway?
Marianne. I'm cracking up.
Me too.
I know, right? They both are makeup artists themselves. And,
are they makeup artists that work all the time in the industry?
The code is 1211.
Yes, from what I can take, yes. They both work all the time and based on, and one of them, you know, they're both women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And they consider women of color, black women, Mediterranean, Indian, Asian, Latin women, you know, not just what we call African-American women. And one of them is a Latin woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and they brought up a lot of valid points, I will say. And that's why I really wish a lot of makeup artists called in last week just to speak about how they felt about it, because I was kind of shocked that the one person that did call in, the one makeup artist that did call in, she was just like totally kind of against, you know, what they were saying. And we had somebody else that called in who kind of raised the same point Yolande did. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to create a line, or are you going to give examples of some lines that do support us, or you know, because I think people, I think the listeners were more like wanting to hear, like you were saying, Marietta, some more positive discussion and kind of more talking about, well, how do we address the issue in a way so that everyone's happy and not so much this is what's going on and we're upset about it and, you know, we're going to boycott it, you know, or whatever. So I just, you know, suggest that you all just kind of look out for it just to kind of see how it's going and where it's going. And again, it's the MAACD campaign. It's Makeup Artists Against Complex Discrimination. I mean, I'm curious to see how it's going to go and what they're going to do. You know, and they have big plans to go across the country to speak to kids. But I'm also curious to see what's going to happen as far as the support of or the non-support of some of these makeup brands. Like, I can't stop supporting some of these other brands because all of my clients aren't women of color.
Agreed.
Exactly.
So, you know.
I mean, okay. So you have a MAC, which is owned by Estee Lauder. You got a Smashbox,
mm-hmm.
which is owned by Estee Lauder. You got a Clinique,
mm-hmm.
which is owned by Estee Lauder. You got an Aveda, which is owned by Estee Lauder.
Monopoly. You better go. You better run it down. Oh, I'm sorry. I got excited.
You know, I mean, overall, that each brand hits something different. You know, Aveda addresses the salon.
Right.
Clinique addresses the problem skin, the sensitive skin, the acne-prone skin and stuff. But Clinique overall has always had some darker foundations in their line.
And don't forget, Prescriptives is no longer around, but,
and
you know.
And that was Estee Lauder, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, at one point they were, you know, you could stand there and watch them mix your whole color together.
Right.
And
right.
I remember a line, Visage, which was just the...
Visage is another one that makes your lines together. Yeah.
That made custom foundations for you. And boy, that's telling my age. But they mix colors for people, you know?
Yeah, they did. And they were highly pigmented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but then you have, you know, a company like Mana Products that makes Your Name Cosmetics, which used to make a lot of these lines. You know, so, as individuals, you have to go around and find which brand best caters to you. You might get a lipstick from one brand and a powder from another and a foundation from another. A lot of black women I know, they're diehard MAC fans.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Brown's Estee Lauder. I mean, you know, so, you know, at the end of the day, what are you boycotting?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's diversity in all of those lines.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
you know, Avon hits the Mary Kay, Avon, they hit the color range.
Laura Mercier is adding more stuff. I mean, she used to have a wide color range, and she
her color range
backed up from it. She backed up from it, and now she's back with a lot of different things, even her secret camouflages, the concealers. They're going,
going
deeper in color. Yeah, they're going deeper
right.
into color.
The powder is going deeper.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I guess they finally realized that darker skin tones exist.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them, you know, Stila doesn't go. Stila's finally started adding a few more darker shades.
Bobby Brown. Even Makeup Forever. You know,
yeah.
Make.
They all literally started to add. Yves Saint Laurent added a lot of. They used to have a lot of darker shades, and then they
yes,
stopped,
they
and then
did.
They added again. I mean, the Touche Clot, they added a number four
mm-hmm.
Touche Clot. I mean, you know.
Marietta, correct me, this is Yolande. Correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm not mistaken, Yves Saint Laurent and Versace, which their cosmetic line is no longer around, and they went for a wide range of colors back in the day.
Really,
and they actually went to fashion fair, and that's how they started their dark
right.
colors. They went to
right.
fashion fair, and that's where they got their advice from, and, you know, their scientific studies and everything in order for them to have that range. But you have to remember, too, our clients, especially African Americans, things were highly priced
so that we couldn't purchase them.
Right.
So once that happened, you know, and you came up with your Fashion Fairs, your Black Opals, and your lower range of cosmetic lines, you know, they didn't put the money into those kind of cosmetic lines at the time, you know, as to what it would we would really need to make us look beautiful or to actually add to our beauty, because that's how I see makeup. We're all already beautiful. Makeup is just to enhance the beauty you already have, you
right,
know,
true.
So... Yeah.
For two and a half years, I was a spokesperson for Interface Cosmetics.
Yeah.
I remember.
Which came out in the department store.
I remember Interface too.
They were in
Sephora. Right. Interface came out to address the needs of darker skin tones. Because the department store didn't address the needs that well. And they came out, and Interface filled the needs of the darker complexions, but it neglected the lighter complexions within the dark skin. You know what I'm saying? They filled the needs of the darker complexion, and they had the darker foundations, but when it came to the lighter shades, they didn't address the needs well. That was my challenge when I was dealing
with the
company.
Then it goes back again into purchasing power. You go back
yes.
into purchasing power.
So how do you
every
explain,
line
how do you
that you
explain,
every line,
hold
on, wait a minute, let me say really quick. Every line that was just listed, all of the lines that were just listed, a bottle or a stick of foundation, none of them less than $45. What are all the customers running to? It's two different things if we talk from a consumer perspective or if we talk
right.
from an artist perspective. As an artist, we know we're going to spend more dollars
more
for more
money.
Quality to get the product that we need to get the job done. But if we're talking about consumers, a consumer is not going to go spend $60 on YSL foundation because
right.
there's no trust factor there. They already feel like, oh, it doesn't work for me. And then if you have MAC, even though MAC puts all brown girls in about the same three shades, they'll still go and buy it because it's cost effective. It's affordable. It's affordable cosmetics. And they don't feel like they're in a box. They're readily going to go buy MAC at a department store so they can feel that experience versus going to a drugstore and paying $14.99 for a stick that matches.
For a stick, yeah.
That matches.
Now, you brought up a very valid point, because my question is now, what are they boycotting? Are they boycotting mass market or are they boycotting professional lines? You know, because it's two different things. Mass market addresses the need, like you just said, the average consumer. So
right.
what are you boycotting? You know what I mean?
Right. Right, exactly.
So, I mean, because that's where the clarity needs to be, because if you're talking two different things.
And if you're just talking about the average consumer, a lot of black women are single mothers,
right.
really working hard, you know, women, and they're used to grabbing a compact that has a puff in it, you know,
right.
that's foundation and powder mixed together,
right.
and throwing it on while they're on the train or on the bus or they're sitting in traffic, and all they put on is eyeliner and some mascara and some lipstick. So, you know... I really don't see a lot of average consumers actually doing makeup the way we all do it.
Right.
Right.
So what are we boycotting? That's what I want to know. What are we boycotting?
Well, ladies, I have Mondel on the line, and he has a comment or a question. Go right ahead. Mondel? Hello, Mondel?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah. I just wanted to go ahead and say I completely agree. I don't understand what it is that they want to boycott. But when you think about it from both the artist
maybe
and the consumer.
Maybe he has 18. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You ready? Okay. We lost him. Oh. All right. We lost the call. Okay, well, we'll get him back on. I was ready to move on to another subject, but I wanted to get him Oh, here it goes. I'm sorry, we have you back on. Go ahead, Mondo.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Right. I just wanted to say I don't understand what is exactly they want to boycott. Like, in terms of the artistry standpoint of it as well as consumer, I think it's a marketing issue. Like, when you say to these brands, like the big brands and even lower, you know, marketed brands, like in terms of the Mac, because Mac is being spoke about a lot now, you know, think about how they advertise. How many times do you see a woman of color in their advertisements? You know what I mean? They don't, from the consumer standpoint, you know, they aren't educated about, you know, skin signing, you know, skincare products, you know, better assistance. So, you know, it's kind of like.
Mondale, hold on 1 second. Marietta, can you mute your phone for me, please?
Sure.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
Mondale, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, in terms of the marketing aspect, it's just, you know, a lot of brands don't market black women the way they should be. So in terms of the education of going, okay, you need a better quality product or, you know, especially with price point, that's why everybody wears MAC. Just like you all were saying, you know, it's affordable, you know, the price point isn't too high, but when you get with these other brands like Yves Saint Laurent and, you know, Dior and things of that nature, they don't advertise for black women. So that's, I mean, I completely agree. That's why so many women gravitate toward the color of the lipsticks and the eyeshadows. And you have some that rarely even go toward the blushes. So it's like, you know, what are you boycotting by saying, you know, just don't buy it whatsoever? You're really just kind of pulling everybody out of the game, period. You know, I just, I don't understand that.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. Are you a makeup artist?
I'm a makeup artist. I worked for MAC, you know, twice, 4 years total. And my thing is that, you know, in W45 Studio Fix Powder was the number one selling SKU. So my thing is, why is it that you keep having, you know, advertisers with just, you know, Caucasian and, you know, some Asian women and not enough women of color advertisers? I can't count on one hand the number of advertisers I've seen within the past couple of years from MAC that hold, you know, that have a woman of color on, you know, the face of it. They don't do much advertising as it is, but what is seen isn't black women. And, you know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think in the beginning, because I worked for a MAC many years ago. This is Yolande. I'm sorry. Did they say your name? Mondale? Is that what it is? I'm sorry.
Mondale.
Yeah. I'm sorry for pronouncing your name wrong. What I was saying was that it's all about numbers at the end of the day. That's where we are.
Yeah.
Like Marietta had said, and I think Denise had said, it's 2011. They're all about numbers right now. In the beginning, Mac, you're right, the Studio Fix, that's what I meant, the compact with the founder, that's what they were all about. And they did in the beginning, they were drawn, black women were drawn to that. They couldn't believe that they didn't have to go get fashion fairs, compact, you know, with the pink sponge, their foundation anymore. You could go get everything in one little thing, you know. So I think after they got MAC, took in the numbers that they were seeking, it didn't matter anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. I just think once they lost, you know, total control of it and just kept creative control once they sold to Estee Lauder, I mean, it just went downhill from there. Even in terms of the artists that did work for MAC, like back in the day, you had to be on your stuff to work for MAC. And now they just hire anybody. I mean, when I see an advertisement that goes cosmetic experience preferred, I'm like, what is that? So, I mean, you're right. It's all about the numbers. It's not even about, you know, catering to a certain, you know, culture or, you know, variety of people anymore. It's just about the money.
And, you know, when you all say that it's all about the money, it reminds me of a comment that I received last week, and they were basically saying, you know, you're right, today, 2011, it's all about the money. But back maybe 10, 15 years ago, maybe what they're saying now would have been really worth a big campaign over. You know what I mean? Like, back in the day when there weren't as many options, then we could have had a campaign going. You know what I mean? Then you could say, okay, don't purchase from here. But now that there are so many options out there, and just like you were saying, there's so many things going on with our skin altogether, you have to play scientists and mix and match or whatever. I think at this point, people, it's like a battle that you can't win. No one wants to spend the time arguing or being upset about the fact that this particular brand doesn't have my color. They just want to move on.
Right. Right.
Yeah, they got to get home and
we have the power to go on. We have the power to make a decision and say, oh, I have the money to spend it elsewhere, so I'm going somewhere else.
But they have to have the option, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
And unfortunately, one of my old agents used to tell me all the time, Yolanda, you're in the image business. So you have to look the part, and it's unfortunate that it has crossed over into everyday living. So a lot of women are looking for that. They could care less whose brand it is. They just want to look the part.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you know, MAC, you're right. MAC, when MAC first came out, the beauty of being a MAC artist is that you had some exclusivity. It catered to the professional. The consumers couldn't get it. You had exclusivity as an artist. I mean, that made a tremendous difference, you know. And the beauty of it, MAC artist could be anything. MAC artist, you know, you were free to express yourself. Now it's turned into a paper pushing game because it's no longer run by artists. It's run by corporate suits.
Exactly, and I think after one of the co-founders, once he passed away and they did sell it to Estee Lauder, I agree 100%. That's when that MAC completely changed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's why everybody who was working for MAC, they all left. Michael DeVillis, all of them, they all left.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's no longer the same thing.
Exactly. You had people that were getting fired because they weren't meeting, you know, AUS numbers or, you know.
Or they were late for three times.
it just went down here in general. But my thing is that I just wanted to be a little bit more than everybody because that was the max because that's the only one that's affordable or that's the only one that requires a good product for a good price. You know what I mean? So it's just like with the boycott, you know, not saying that it's to MAC, but, you know, to boycott other lines, that's because, you know,
I want to move on to, and Mondo, you're welcome to stay on the line with us. I want to move on to the next topic. And Yolanda said something when she talked about the image. I kind of want to incorporate that into this next question. But let's talk a little bit about professionalism as an artist.
I can't hear you.
I gotta go.
Yeah, we can hear.
Okay. I wanted to talk about professionalism as an artist. I wanted to get into the dress and our image as artists, as well as in regards to social media and networking, working on set, working with customers at the counter. Let's talk a little bit about professionalism.
Then or now?
Now. Let's talk now.
Where do we start?
Right, that's the question.
this is Yolanda. First, let me say it's an honor actually to be on a panel with everybody. Marietta, I'm bowing at this point. I know you heard it for many, many moons and many years, but you know, as long as I can remember, I've always watched your work. You were one of the idols I had to want to even get into the film business.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And, I mean, you may not remember, it was over 16 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure if you're one of your nieces, her name is Tanya. I worked with her many years ago on one of my very first music videos, and I remember she was telling me about you, and I was just in awe. I learned from actually watching Marietta and some of the other ladies in Los Angeles at the time in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, when you're an assistant, that's what you're there for. I learned, you know, you're not supposed to pass out your card or basically solicit business because the
key... Okay, say that again.
When you're an assistant, you're there to assist. You're not there to pass out your card and to get a new client. You're there to go to work. And
okay,
say that again. There's a key makeup artist, and then there's a head of the department. And those two ladies, whether they be ladies, a man or a woman, that's who you take your direction from. Okay, you're there to work with them. Your head of your department creates your look. Your key gives you the style, tells you, and does the makeup for you. You watch, learn, and you create from there. And unfortunately, again, we're in 2011, and it's not like that anymore. So I often find it very hard for myself to find an assistant who's even loyal enough to even come and just mind the set for you while you're working on your other principles in the trailer.
Without trying to steal your job?
Yes.
She just shut it down, Marietta. I mean, what else can be said?
I mean, Marietta, Bernadette, I mean, I can name a lot of them, you guys. They set the tone, and it's unfortunate that the ladies, they just don't do it anymore.
Right.
It's called professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. You made a great point, Yolanda. You said they set the tone. You go on a lot of shows nowadays, and the department heads and the keys aren't necessarily always setting the tone.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's always like that. I'm just saying there's going to be some shows where you may see that happen, and then you see the assistants, your interns, your assistants, and other people, they're just following the lead.
Right.
But that's just some shows. That's not all the time. But then there are situations where they set the tone, and most shows they do.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have people that come on who, like you said, they want to give out the business cards, they want to solicit business, they want to take pictures, and they're not there doing the work. And then the leads wind up always doing all of the work.
All of the work, yeah. You know, your assistant, you're supposed to be taking continuity pictures, you know, putting the book together. I mean, there's a lot to be done.
When you are hired, or somebody hires, or you hire someone, that's why you have to have dialogue from day one. It can't happen after something happens. You have to, I mean, I've hired a lot of people in this industry, and I find that one of the things from day one, I set up what I'm looking for. I don't expect you to be a mind reader and know what I'm looking for. I set up exactly what I'm looking for so that you understand how I work. And I try to be very, very specific as to what I'm looking for. I don't want you cleaning my brushes because I didn't hire you to wait on me.
Exactly.
So I don't want you cleaning my brushes. I don't want you messing with my stuff. I want you to work with me.
Yeah.
If I wanted a maid, I would have hired one. So I don't hire people to be my maids. I hire you because I respect the quality of your work, and I expect that you're capable of following instructions. And so I hire you to work with me in the department, and I expect that if I tell you that, you know, hey, I need you to do this particular actor, that you can follow basic instruction. Especially if I hand you a foundation, it means that this is what I want, the foundation I want you to use in doing this particular actor. Dialogue doesn't have to take place in order for you to understand this, because the worst thing is for you to not understand what I'm saying to you when I hand you the foundation and the powder that goes with it, that this is what you're going to use to do the actor. When you turn around and you say, oh, why you want me to use this color? Right away, the actor is now insecure because you didn't get it.
Right.
You know me having to have dialogue.
Absolutely.
So sometimes dialogue cannot take place. But common sense has to set in. But common sense isn't always very common.
It's true.
So, you know, there's a lot. You know, makeup schools are pushing out students so fast, but they're not
pushing them
out to bridge the gap between school and the set. So they do not understand any kind of set etiquette. Okay, so great, you can do a ball cap, but you still have no set etiquette. You don't understand what's supposed to take place in order for you to work as a professional. You know, it's very sad. Our industry has gone to pot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really has. It really has.
It has. I think that's really for a
About the entertainment industry, there aren't enough women. I don't care of color, not of color. There just aren't enough. There's not enough female singers. We don't have enough R&B singers. There's not enough soul singers. I mean, you name it. There's not enough actresses. You know, they don't make movies like they used to. I mean,
30 days to make a movie. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, they do movies in 14 days these days, some of these shows,
right,
you know. So, you know, they don't make movies like they used to. It's, you know, it's a big change.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Let's talk about really quickly social media, and still on the professionalism topic. You know, a lot of people want to use social media to promote themselves, promote their work, promote their product, you know, whatever. But I see a lot of people who are doing or saying things that doesn't necessarily promote them in a positive way. What do you guys think about makeup artists, hairstylists, whatever kind of artist you are? What do you think about how are we presenting ourselves in a professional way through social media?
I think, and this is Danielle talking, I think social media has gotten to a place where people feel like they can say anything. And even though I feel like that is, you know, expected, or that's something that people feel like they've always wanted something to use to voice their opinion, if your account, for example, is to advertise or to market your services, your brand, it needs to represent that. And there have been a couple of times where I've seen other artists who, in one instance, is talking about, you know, makeup or hair or whatever the case may be, and then something goes wrong somewhere, and then we start talking about things that are inappropriate, whether it be language, whether it be pictures. That whole concept of a brand goes to the trash can. And I don't think people realize what they put out there is going to impact them negatively. Although I understand we're all adults, this is still a business. And if you want me to look at you as a business owner or a, you know, an entrepreneur, there are certain expectations that I should expect from you, and vice versa. So when I see these things, I get confused. How am I supposed to look at you now? Because you either disrespected me or disrespected this craft as a whole, with the assumption that all artists are to think that way. It befuddles me. I get lost, and then I just block them from my account. So,
hi, this is Santara. I will say this. I think that everything needs a mindset. And I think that first we have to recognize everybody is not a brand because they are a makeup artist.
Right.
And everybody does not have an entrepreneurial spirit. That's just the reality of it. So people get on social media as they are, not as a brand and not as an entrepreneur. So that's why there's a difference in what you see. There are people who understand branding. There are people who take their artistry as a business, so they govern themselves as such. And there are people who have no concept. All they know, we live in a I'm doing me boo-boo world.
Mm-hmm.
Mind your business, I'm doing me.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, they're like, who are you to tell me? You know, I see very reputable makeup artists on social media, and their language is off the hook. Are they not getting jobs? Absolutely. Absolutely. They tweet, they take pictures about being on set. They have superb clientele, but they are not a brand. It is very clear. They are not a brand. They are just a makeup artist, and they get on social media to say what they need to say and get off their chest and de-stress and do what they have to do. I'm a believer in meeting people where they are. I don't expect you to be any more than who you put forth to be. And if I can respect you there, then nothing else is going to bother me. And that we do have that right. We have that right to unfollow, to unfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the issues that I see is we go at each other. We don't have the respect to send like a private note and say, hey, sis, hey, brother, you know, maybe, you know, it kind of, let's talk about this over here. We don't,
right.
We don't, we there's no accountability to one another to pull the coattail. We just get aggravated and frustrated and go, well, why are they talking like this? Well, that's disrespectful. Well, that's how they govern their life. If they kick back in 40s and drink and do, I'm doing me and basketball wives is their way of living, it's not going to make sense. It's not. It's not going to make sense. You know, glittered shadow is pretty to them. Rhinestones on lashes is fly, boo-boo. You know, that's what works for them. They're not a brand.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I was... This is Yolanda. At the end of the day, I had to realize just throughout my journey, period, in this business, my mama always told me there's no honor amongst thieves. So, you know, you kind of, you know, just like you teach your own children and your nieces and your nephews and all that, you know, watch who you play with. If little Johnny jumps off the bridge, you don't jump with him too. So, you know... God takes care of everything. What's yours is yours. What's mine is mine. And, you know, you got to pray.
Mm-hmm. I say, listen, makeup artists are losing jobs by the tweet. You can help
them,
but at the end of the day, you don't have to be concerned about your job.
Mm-hmm.
If this is how they govern themselves, it really works in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It really does. It works in your favor. If
it's only
really
going to last for so long.
If you're following the right people and you pay attention to the people who have the hiring power, talk to them offline. There are artists who are getting jobs via social media. These companies are paying attention. They're using facial recognition technology. They're seeing your Facebook pages. They're seeing your Twitter pages. They're hiring you because they're paying attention to how you govern yourself. If you go back and forth with someone else online and they're just being who they are, where do you set yourself up at? You have to be accountable to something. If you pull a coattail or you show somebody themselves, do it offline. You do it offline and you let and govern yourself accordingly, but you always present yourself with a proper ethical front when it comes to social media, because once it's out there, it's out there.
It's out there.
You know, you can ignore it or you can be a part of it. But the reality is it doesn't jeopardize your job. Basically, they're making you look more hireable.
That's right. That's right. Ladies, this has been an awesome, awesome discussion. I mean, I have more questions, but we're running out of time. We'll have to definitely do this again on another show. I know Yolanda has a job she has to get to. Marietta has a party she probably has to finish.
Marietta,
yes.
This is Yolanda. Thank you.
Hi, Annie.
Yes,
thank you.
Oh, I appreciate all the compliments. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's an honor.
I know my poor sister has had so many phone issues tonight, so I feel sorry for AT&T tomorrow.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes. Boy.
Oh, they're going to get it.
They are going to get it. Bright and early.
And I'm probably saying your name wrong. Is it Mondell?
Yes.
Spell it for me.
It's R-O-N-D-E-L-L.
Oh, Rondell. Okay,
Rondell.
Rondell.
I apologize.
You call me Dell for short.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. It was great to kind of have a guy sit in with us.
Thank you for having me.
So are you on Facebook or Twitter? We can follow you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I just follow Illusions Beauty, and I was trying to find Yolanda's page and everyone else who was on the call, but you can follow me on Twitter at rjohnbeauty, just like that. No spaces between anything. It's all lowercase. And you can find me on Facebook. It's Dell, D-E-L-L Johnson. You can find me there. And, it was was absolutely a pleasure to be on the call. Thank you for having me.
Okay, I'm just you. I'm just me, Yolande Denise.
Yes.
On both Facebook and Twitter.
Yolande Denise.
Marietta CN.
And Marietta
Denise. I think she's mentioned all of you. So I'm gonna go to her page and I'll just click on everybody's link and I'll follow everybody from there and yep.
Okay,
wonderful. Well, everyone
thank
have a great evening. Tune in out.
Okay,
thank you, Marietta.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah.
You too.
Send me that link.
So
send me that link to the group that is boycotting.
Okay.
All right. Good night. I'm not causing any trouble. Good night.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Yolande. I know it was last minute, so thank
no,
you.
No, so it's
much.
All good. Call. I'll do it anytime. Just holler at me.
Okay. All right.
Love you, ladies. Keep making everybody
thank
beautiful.
You.
All
yes,
right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Santara. I really appreciate your comments. And Danny, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know if you...
I missed the sermon.
Sister, you missed the sermon?
I'm here now. Yeah, I missed the sermon.
I don't know if you want to do beauty news or not, but you can if you want. If not, we'll just end the show.
You know what? I'll do beauty news out on Facebook, the fan group page.
Okay. So anybody who wants to find out what's going on, check that out. Thank you so much to all the people in the chat room. There are so many people in the chat room. Tyra's Little Sis, Star Jackson, Sherry Blossom, Shauna Janelle, J.K. Hunter, Jim James Beauty, Janelle Porter, The Gorgeous Ingredient. That's you,
Santara,
right? Creatively Yours. I'm trying to get used to everybody's, like, little names on Twitter and here on Blog Talk Radio. Aisha Carter, and then there is Meryl, I think it is. But thank you all so much for joining us in the chat room. I enjoyed all your comments, as always. Thanks, Jen James, for you know how you always do. You're always putting up links and repeating stuff. So thank you so much for that. Join us again next week. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter to find out who our guest will be for next week. Thank you for all those who listen by phone. And I think Revealing Beauty, I think she's listening to us.
She's on the phone.
I do believe.
Yes,
she's
she
on
is.
The phone. Okay.
She is.
So thank you for listening to us tonight. Again, thank you, ladies, so much for joining us. I really enjoyed it. If it wasn't going to shut down the chat room, I would go on for another hour. But
tell everybody in the chat room to call in now.
Yeah, I know.
I'll tweet it. What did you say?
I just want to say really quick. I mean, we can go all stay on the phone for a few extra minutes if you guys want, but I just wanted to say, you know, Marietta's, the noise in the background was a little of a distraction, but her comments were. You know, the thing I love about her is she speaks the truth. She always speaks what she feels is the truth, and sometimes it just makes me want to crack up. I think it's how she says it more so.
It's so matter of fact.
Yeah, it really is. It's just. I was trying not to snicker so loud, but. You know, and the ladies last week, they made some valid points, but I think, I don't know if it was my sister who made the comment or somebody else who made that comment, like, that this would have been a topic definitely for some years ago and not necessarily now, because people at this point don't want to argue about it. You know, they just want to either find a solution or move on. And now that we have so many options, we really don't have to even go there. But like I said, and like someone said, I think it was Shauna Janelle in the chat room, she was saying, you know, we should just watch and see, you know, see what they're going to do. And then, you know, form an opinion after that. So, but if there's anybody in the chat room who wants to join the conversation right now, we'll stay on the line for a few more minutes and just call in with your comments or your questions or whatever it is you want to say. We'll stay on the line just a few more minutes, and I appreciate you, Danny and Santara, for hanging in there with us.
You know, let me just say this, and I wanted to say it last week, but I kind of heard. I mean, I could hear the passion in I think it was Monifa. I could really hear the Monifa. I'm sorry. I could really hear the passion, you know, in her voice when she spoke about it. But then I also, you know, it's like I could also hear like a little bitterness, a little attitude or something, you know, I guess when someone spoke against what they were saying. And, I mean, to me, I think you have to really be open to hearing all sides of the situation. And I think I think what they're saying goes a lot deeper than what they think they're saying. And the whole idea of them going around speaking to, you know, kids in middle school and things like that about the issue, I really think they're introducing something that maybe these kids don't really know anything about and shouldn't know, you know, anything about. It's like going to a 2 or 3 year old and introducing them to racism. Like, why do that? You know, they're going to have all of their lives to possibly experience that. And then someone may go through, you know, a big portion of their life and not really experience that at all. It's like you're giving people, you're giving young people, you know, something to think about that they may not have ever, you know, really considered. It's like, why, you know, why put that in their head?
Right. I agree.
And I think, too, why, you know, and this is just me thinking, why should it come from someone that I don't know? Why should, you know, this whole issue about, you know, skin color and race and ethnicity and injustice come from people that I'm not familiar with? Why should that not come back from family or, you know, older people around
right.
me that, you know, will
right.
let me know this is what you think, this is what, you know, people before you stood for, and this is what we expect of you and what you give back to your community. Taking it from a beauty approach, you know, I'm not sure how effective that will be. So it will be interesting for me to see how they will measure the success of this campaign. What are they
yeah.
going to determine is going to say, we did it. We did what we sought mm-hmm. out to do based upon X, Y, and Z. So I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I'm left with, a little bit of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And 404 area code, I don't know who this is, but you're on the line if you want to speak.
Oh, I think this is Aisha.
Oh, hi, Aisha.
Hi, how are you doing? I wasn't really talking about in terms of the campaign, because for me, the campaign as it relates to the beauty industry as a whole is more than
mm-hmm.
just about cosmetics. You know,
right,
I grew up in Canada. I grew up in Canada, and there we had very few lines that really, you know, spoke to black women. And as a result, if you look at magazines, advertisements, billboards, I think that's what really they should be targeting. It's what's represented there, not really the cosmetics. I think it's more towards that. So I think that, I mean, I don't know a lot about what, you know, their whole program is about, but I do think it's slightly misguided if you look at the base. And I think Marietta put it better. It's about racism. I mean, it has to do more with that than it has to do about just cosmetics, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to address the professionalism and social media. I think what's really different right now is that with this particular generation and the popularity of social media, I see that what used to define a makeup artist in the past really doesn't do it now for that younger generation. Like, a lot of people feel that if you can put makeup on yourself really well and you have a YouTube channel and you have 20,000 subscribers. But it's true, and then that makes you a makeup artist, and it really is not the case. You know, that just because I can put makeup on myself doesn't mean that I'm skilled to do it on someone else. But it's really hard to tell those people that, because in their minds they're online celebrities. Do you know what I mean? For lack of a better word. So I just think the parameters of professionalism is really different, because a lot of these people haven't really gone through the sort of schooling, training, nor are they humble or interested in learning it. So it does make
it back to dollars
for other artists.
It all goes back to those purchasing dollars. When you if you bring those people into the circle, if that's what you bring into the circle, who supports them? When you look at these really top people in the video making, in the blogging, they're not professionals. When you look at the top hair blogger, not a professional. When you look at top makeup blogger, they're not professionals. They are not. And when they get to a certain point in these different medias, companies get behind them. So if companies put their dollars behind them because it ensures more purchasing dollars, then they're not, the brand is not supporting the artist.
That's right.
The brands are not supporting the artist. If you go that route, that's the truth of the matter. The brands are not supporting the artist. The brands are not going to artists saying what's best, because the artists are not selling. It's about the dollar. We go, we do a job, we get paid for the job, and we leave. We do not function with the mindset that we are going to sell. We sell our service, and that is it. We do not do a job with the mindset to sell products. So, for instance, I had a conversation with someone, and she shared with me about a job she did, and then someone else who's going to do the next segment of a job that works for a direct sales company. And I said to her, your mindsets are totally different. Your mindset is to get a job done, to give the client what they want so that that client can have a good day. The network marketing person, her mindset is to make a sale. She sees it as purchasing dollars from, if she can get this person to buy for people in her party, if she can do a good job with application, I can tell her, well, I'll give you this so much, because she'll give her so much product at a quote wholesale price. But at the end of the day, it's about meeting her monthly goal. So the mindset is totally different, and that is what's happening in the industry. Brands aren't supporting us because we're not selling their product. We're not. Mm-hmm. We go and we get a job done, and we use what works for us to get the job done, but we are not selling. We do not hit our clients with the idea that our client will want to buy the foundation that we use when we walk away. Brands want the cash register ringing, and that's what it's all about. It's all about dollars and cents. When you have someone on YouTube, the reason why they're looking to make partner and all that stuff is because it brings in dollars, not because they will be a better artist at the end of the day. That's not what it is.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
But you start selling the product and see what happens. It changes, and I've been on both sides, and I've told makeup artists who are struggling. I've said it. I say, you want to make money? Go into network marketing. Go over, not become a consultant, as in sell the product, but go over and use your skills to train their people. Because when you look at some of the brands that sell makeup, they'll call themselves, they'll be like, oh, I'm a makeup artist. You say, who you work for? They will be just as proud to say the network marketing company they work for. And they believe that they're makeup artists within that circle. Does that make it right? Does that make us say, you can't call yourself an artist because you work for this network marketing? No, because some of them are very talented, but there's a lot of money to be made because they believe in training and education, and they will pay the dollar to get the good training and education. If you're a good makeup artist and you go to an executive and position yourself to train their consultants to better use, which will effectively sell their product, because there's a key phrase, facts tell, stories sell. We tell stories as artists with our craft. Our story is told when we do a face. They get facts. We tell the story. Train their people how to properly use and watch their numbers climb. That it works. I've seen it work. I've been a part of it. For 7 years, that's what I started doing, because I was like, wow, there's money over here. You get some training, you can do training, and it's good money over here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how, there's different ways. That's why when makeup artists are like, I'm out here struggling, you haven't met the right network marketer, because I'm telling you, the rate is $200 an hour.
sit in your pajamas and pull out some product and tell them the power of the product and how they can move that product amongst their clients. It's about teaching them language. Everybody speaks a different language. The language changes, but the universal language in it all is dollars and cents.
Universal language, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. I spent most of my career in corporate America, and that's what companies want to know. That's what they want to see. I mean, it's bridging the gap between the two. I think you hit it the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's required to be successful nowadays, point blank, period. It's nothing else, nothing more to it. You just have to be able to bridge that gap. It is a business.
It is. Frances says she got kicked out.
Oh, come back in, Frances. We're still here.
I guess it's not letting people in.
She should be. I mean, they should. We have, there's no reason why. We have plenty of phone lines. Tell her try again.
All right, I just told her to try it again.
Yeah, and you know what? And I was just putting on, in the chat room, you know, we have a premium account now, so it doesn't even kick the people off of the chat room. Like before, once the show was over, anybody that called in can still hear, but the chat room couldn't still hear. But now we still have the chat room, so they can still come in the chat room and you can still call in on the line. We have plenty of phone lines.
Okay. I just told her to call in.
Yeah, I mean, that conversation last week alone just led to so many, there are so many other topics that came out of just that issue alone. And we won't even get into the color discrimination that they were even mentioning, because like Marietta said, that's just a whole other issue that we don't even really need to deal with. Not on Beauty Talk anyway. But also the question that I was asking about professionalism, there's a couple of things, like Yolanda started talking about. She went straight to talking about assisting. And that was another question that I had that I was going to even bring up separate from professionalism. But she made some good points just talking about assisting. And I wish my sister would get back on the line. Because, you know, she just worked with at least, let's see, I want to say three or four, may have been even five. She had, assistants. Sometimes they're called interns, depending on what they're doing or whatever. But she had, anywhere from three to five assistants / interns on this last project that she did in L.A. And I heard so many different things, I'll say. And actually, I believe one of her interns just did a blog post, which I thought was really nice. She did a blog post about her experience.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, she did.
You saw that? I thought that was really nice of her to do that. And, you know, based on some of the things that my sister said, this young lady, you could tell that she came to work. And to learn, and some of the things that my sister told me about it, I was just really happy that that she had the opportunity and that she was there. But then, you know, there are always situations where, because people always use that example when you assist, you know, not giving out your business cards.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a little more than that. As well, there are a lot of times you find people who come on, and sometimes they're so caught up in who's actually in the movie, and they're so busy, they're caught up so much into that. And am I going to do that person's makeup, or am I going to do any makeup today?
Got
you know, and just like Marietta said, you know, the thing about cleaning your brushes, you know, some makeup artists feel different about that. Like some makeup artists want an assistant or an intern to come in and clean their brushes.
Mm-hmm.
I have to somewhat agree with Marietta. You know,
don't touch your brushes.
That's not
$500.
Really, Well, you know, but my thing is, you know, I need somebody that's going to come in and work. Like, when I'm looking for interns or even assistants, I want somebody that can work. So when I'm working on a film, and especially, like, if I'm doing, like, tattoo work or something like that, I need you to be able to airbrush. If you can airbrush, then I need you to airbrush. Don't clean my brushes, but help airbrush or help, you know, cover tattoos or what have you. And now if it gets to the point where I need my brushes clean, then it's something that I should ask you, not you just be standing by my side cleaning my, every time I pick up a brush, put it down, you cleaning it. Because I've had that experience too, and it just drove me crazy. And this might be J.K. Hunter trying to get on it. Is this J.K.?
Yes, this is J.K. What's
hey,
going on?
Hi, J.K.
Hi, everybody.
I've been waiting for you to talk all night.
I know.
I just
was letting you all talk. I wasn't going to interfere, say anything. I was talking on the chat room.
Yeah, I saw you in the chat room. But we were just moving the conversation on to assistants, and I was just talking about
I heard you. That's why I chimed in.
Right.
And Denise isn't on the phone, but she can testify to this because she saw it firsthand when we worked on that BET show together. Because I was there to assist both of them since I do hair and makeup. The hair girl, she just wanted me, that was her thing. She wanted to punk me, and she wanted me just to wash her brushes. And she didn't ask me to wash her brushes, every day. I knew that's the main thing she wanted, but she would wait till all of the key actors got on set. And then she would say, oh, I need you to go wash my brushes. Can you just go wash my brushes? Really loud, attempting to embarrass me. But, I can't be embarrassed by something like that. I'm there to work, and I'm getting paid. I'll wash your brushes if you need me to. Now, this was just a few years ago. So, people don't want to assist, after they've gotten so many years in the game. In my case, I don't mind assisting, somebody. As long as I'm being paid, I'm working, I'm happy to work. I love doing makeup, so I'm happy to work. I didn't mind cleaning her brushes. It's just how she did it and that she was holding up an entire production somewhere in the range of 30 to 50 people daily because it was taking her 3 to 4 hours to cut 4 guys' hair. And I was there to also cut hair and help her with that. And she didn't want me to cut hair. So there are things to learn on the assistant side, and there are things to learn for those people who are department heads who just have gotten beside themselves about it.
Absolutely. And that's why I made that comment earlier when we were talking about, when she was talking about the assistants wanting to give out their cards and solicit work. And then that's why I said, that's why you have assistants who, they're there to follow your lead. But sometimes if you're not leading the way you should, and so sometimes you have these department heads who it's all about them, it's their ego, they think they are the star.
Right.
And, and unfortunately assistants have a bad experience, not because of anything on their own, but because of the lead. So it goes both ways.
Right.
And it's just that we all have to learn and know how to carry ourselves and to present ourselves on whatever job. A lot of times when I give examples and speak from examples, I'm always talking about a film set because that's what I do. But not just that. It could be a photo shoot. It could be at the department store at the counter. It's all the same. We have to learn how to be professional and carry ourselves in a professional way and present ourselves in a professional way.
I said that earlier on the chat room, whether it's a photo set, a video set, a television set, or a film set, professionalism is across the board. It should be consistent and the same. You shouldn't be showing out and acting a fool on any of them. You should learn how to handle yourself. And if you don't know how to handle yourself, the best thing to do is to be quiet.
That's
it. Somebody and do what you're told to do and keep it moving. But the problem with that girl, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that as an assistant, one of the most important things you have to do is, and like Meredith was talking about, knowing when to talk and when not to talk. But one of the first things you need to do at the very beginning when you come on the set to assist somebody or to be an intern, if the person is not telling you what they expect, like Marietta says she always does in the beginning, if the person's not telling you what they want from you or expect from you, then you need to open your mouth and ask that question.
Yes.
Because
I agree.
Once they get in the groove and everything is started, you know, at that point, the department head or whoever is so wrapped up in what they're doing, they may not be thinking about it. And then here you are, standing somewhere, not doing what they thought they expected you to do or said they wanted you to do. You have to ask questions up front.
Right. Yeah. They should. And as the leader of your group, whether you call department head key or whatever it is, if it's a two-person group, then, you know, one person obviously is the head person or the lead person because they have more time on the set. I mean, that's mainly going to be on smaller set photo shoots, something like that. You just should follow the lead of the more experienced person unless they're out of hand.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You know, follow that person's lead. I do the same thing. Whatever I'm on, if I'm over it, and especially the Stellar Awards, I prep people beforehand. I had one guy that worked with me this year who had called me and he asked me maybe a year or two in advance, can he work with me? And I told him that's fine. He's gay. He wears his hair all kinds of different ways, and he was wearing at that time a crazy mohawk. That looks fine depending upon where he is. And he normally dresses fine, but I prepped him beforehand. Tone that hair down. Wear some completely covered, nice, neat clothes, all black, which I tell all of them. I send information telling them what to wear, what not to wear, the basics. We're in a Christian show. You can't come in here doing all this craziness. Don't be flamboyant. And I told him, because we're cool, man it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's just what had to be done. And if you're the department head and you can't do it, then maybe you shouldn't be department head. You have to be able to tell people. It is, and you don't have to do it from the point of being nasty or hurting anybody's feelings. But you just have to tell people so that they don't make you look bad and make you look unprofessional, because that's what ends up happening. If you're over everything, you end up looking unprofessional. I have a long discussion about what I prefer, what I don't like, what I do like, how I want things to be handled, and I don't like drama in makeup rooms. And a lot of makeup rooms have that. I can't stand it. I loathe that. So I have a discussion with them that I'm not having it from them or from the artist. They come in. And that if anything happens, let me handle it. I'll handle it. So over the past few years, I haven't had one issue on that show. And some other shows where, you know, people tend to do some stuff that, you know, you would not prefer. But you play every show by ear. Move forward. The professionalism, I agree with what Marietta said on the, she said the bridging the gap between what's being taught in these classes and the actual set. Oh, my God. That's just like college. Remember, for those who, you know, if you went to college, how you used to say, I'm not going to use any of this crap when I go to work, when I work in an actual job, you know, and some of the instructors can't teach you what actually happens once you get into an actual job or corporate world. It's the same thing, that now that gap isn't being bridged. I try to teach people when I have my classes and tell them some basics of professionalism, set etiquette, you know, and give them a variety of things, not just makeup. But most of them don't want to listen. All they want is makeup, makeup, makeup.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize there are other entities to this.
Right.
That it's just like working on the set of something. It's just like working at a corporate office. It's not just that I'm going to do my job. I got to know how to act if the CEO is around, if the CFO, or if anybody is a boss or any VP is around me, I have to know how to act if I'm in a corporate setting. Then why don't you have to do the same thing and on the set of something that relates to your makeup or hair job? You do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
You got to know it all.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean,
I think there's no education bridging that gap. people just don't know. I think coming to Beauty Talk, the group of people that are here are the first, actually, that I've ever heard in the industry say, I want you to work with me. You know, I've mm-hmm. heard and seen people like, you work for me, you know, with that mm-hmm. attitude. And so people will go because they don't know what to do. No one's teaching them. No one's telling them. You know, you still have people today saying who, you know, have monikers of, you know, they're high, they either work for a brand, they're a celebrity, whatever, and they say, I got here all by myself. Nobody told me nothing. You have people speaking that when they're talking yeah. about how they made it. And so if they're saying that, how in the world did you not have anybody helping you? You know,
right,
I had to
right.
things on my own. I had to figure it out on my own. So you have mm-hmm. the younger generation going around feeling like they have to figure it out on their own. Well, how are they going to do that? Because no one's going into the libraries anymore, but there are still books. They're going online. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. you have all these people. I said to someone earlier, I said, no, I'm not okay with people sitting and learning all day online, and I'm still paying Sally Mae. No, I'm not okay with that. I'm mm-hmm. really not. You know,
yeah.
like I'm still paying student loans because I paid to go to college and get an education to know what I know. So, no, I'm not okay with someone who's not a professional trying to tell me what is best for skin or hair. I'm not,
yeah.
I'm not, I can respect it and I can nod my head and say, yep, you have learned a lot. But I don't have to co-sign to that because I feel like I've been out here paying my dues too. I'm by the book, I've been ethical. I don't have to sit and go along with that and think it's okay. And just mm-hmm. just because that's the way of the internet now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back to our discussion of people learning by YouTube and not actually taking classes.
Right.
I mean, you need to take somebody's class somewhere. You know, I went to college and barber and cosmetic school and makeup school. I mean, you got to go get some training.
You have to.
But I think a lot of that is, you know, you'll hear so much of I'm self-taught. Like she said earlier, I'm self-taught. They've learned learned through putting makeup on themselves. I mean, what's been the most humbling transition for me in this industry is that I worked in corporate America. You know, I got a degree, I got my MBA, and then coming here, it was a whole new world. It was like starting, like being a freshman again. You know, so
yeah.
like a lot of it has to do with humility, but you'll see a lot of artists don't have a lot of humility, you know, especially
yeah.
people who have considered themselves to be self-taught, who have a following, who, you know, they're really not used to that. Maybe they have never taken formal classes, but they get a lot of business. In their minds, it's a foreign idea.
Mm-hmm. So. And someone
I've been
self-taught.
On a fashion show. I've been on a fashion show with a young lady where, you guys, she was like, I'm a makeup artist. I said, okay, you know, everyone's setting up. Oh, my goodness. And I didn't know what to say. You know what I mean? Like, there was no, I don't know what the standard is. I don't, you know, the process. And I'm still relatively new, so what can I do other than, you know, you can tell people, hey, there's these different venues here to learn, but people really have to take it among themselves and learn it, too.
Yeah, they do. And just it doesn't just come by osmosis. You got to want to learn it. You got to get into it. Well. Denise?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did Denise ever come back?
She never came back.
Oh,
I think she just gave up.
Did you see my note, though? Oh, I called from my house phone, and it tells you that there are no show schedules right now. So
well,
you can't get in.
Because, you know, well, probably because the show, and that's probably why the other people can't call back in, because
okay.
the show was scheduled for 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
But even if we continue on, it resets itself for another hour. But I guess if somebody's calling in, it's like there's no show set up.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Got to get on Google Plus. You got to get on Google Plus.
Google Plus
is a new social media, but it's kind of like they combine. It's like Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter. It's like all together, But basically, we all could all watch videos together. We can all chat together. So you do everything in a group. They do everything in what they call circles.
I think that's what Danny was telling me about that, and I tried to get on, but when I went to go sign on, they said that I guess they weren't accepting any more people at the time because it was still in its beta phase.
Yep, it's still you only get in on invite. But what it is they have so many people that they'll let, so many invites can go out in a day. Once you're a member, then you can invite people, but you only get so many invites. Like I can invite you in, and once you get in, then you can invite people. But if they fill up their invite quota for the day, then all the invites are put on hold, and it may take anywhere from a day or two for you to get on. But
gotcha.
You should go back and check, because if you did try to get on, you might be able, if you already got an invite, you should be able to get back in.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's saying it's in its field trial, and you can leave your email and let you know when you can get in.
No,
exactly.
But you could, right, that just means that the quota was filled for the day. That doesn't mean it doesn't take that long. It takes about 24 hours for that to, like, go away.
Oh, I'm still sitting here waiting on my email. Okay.
Yeah, no. If you go in there, it'll let you go right now. It's really cool.
Okay.
Well, stay tuned. We might have something set up there. We'll see
Right. Right. That means I'll need a camera, huh?
Right. Thank you, ladies, so much. This has really been an interesting show, interesting conversation. I'm glad you guys hung in there and, hung on the line for a little while longer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is this Santara?
Yeah.
Is that Santara talking? Oh, I thought that was you.
No, that wasn't me talking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who was that talking that was saying about the Google Plus?
Oh, I was talking about Google Plus. Santara, yes.
Oh. Santara, okay. I thought that was you. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just asking, how you doing?
I'm good. If y'all give me y'all email right now, I'll send you an invite.
Okay, yeah. Oh. So mine is day 8. Here, let me put it in the chat room. Oh, are you writing?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
can put it in the chat room?
Yeah, I was going to put my email in the chat room.
Oh, if you say it, I got it right here on my face.
Okay.
I'm on it.
All right, J-A-N-I-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
T-U-N-N-E-L-L at Gmail. And
okay,
do you have a Gmail account to do it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I'm JK at jkhunter.com.
JK.
Oh, I'll put mine here too.
Yep. Okay.
And I'm A.N. Carter at Gmail.
A.N. as in Nancy?
Mm-hmm.
A.N. Carter. Carter with a C?
Yes, Carter with a C.
At
gmail.com.
Okay, and who's next?
And that's it. I think that's all that's left on the phone lines anyway.
Aisha, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is Princess Zamunda.
Princess what?
Zamunda.
Princess Zamunda? Like.
Yeah, coming to America.
Can I just tell y'all both?
I have two.
Her blending is impeccable.
Okay.
Her blending is impeccable. She just won a contest. Her blending is crazy.
Oh, yes. Who's blending?
Princess Zamunda.
Put that on Twitter for me. On Twitter,
okay.
On the top. On the
I'll
chat
follow
room.
You. JK, what's your Twitter monitor? I'm on Twitter right now.
JK. JK Hunter.
Okay, I'll follow you and I'll send you a note.
That'll work.
Okay. Yeah, follow me because. I can't spell all that.
Is this Janice?
Right.
That's Janice.
No, if it's Janice, I already follow you.
Okay. Well, spell your.
I'll send you something right now.
Look, I'll never find you trying to spell all that.
It's like coming to America.
I know what you're saying on coming to the America. I just don't know how to spell it.
I actually have two. Okay. I have this one, and I have one for just makeup, but it's transferring everything over to that one now that I need to do.
Okay, Z-U-M-U-N-D-A.
Yes.
Yeah, I found it. Oh, wait a minute. Now it says this person doesn't exist. Princess.
I'm sending you one right now.
Okay.
Here she is. Yeah, I'll send it to you guys.
That just proved to me that it's way too much going on with that then.
Yeah. That's, I mean, what's your actual name? What's your actual name? Is it Aisha?
Aisha. Uh-huh.
Aisha.
It's just Aisha, okay. Without the no E.
Without the what?
Just Aisha instead of Aisha.
Okay. My niece is I-E-S-H-A. Aisha. Which you are,
yeah,
Aisha.
It's just Aisha. Like if you, the A, it's an Arabic spelling, but if you take the A off of it, it's just Aisha.
Mm.
Like if it was
okay.
Just I-S-H-A.
Oh, okay.
That's on Tara?
Yes.
I so appreciate you. I really do. I'm so happy I thought of you, this show. I really am. I'm just so thankful that you were able to come on. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. The way the conversation went tonight, it almost makes me really want, we try to do this like once a quarter. Just get makeup artists, together and just have these kind of conversations. But this tonight's conversation really made me want to do it more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, just getting the right, the right blend of people on the panel and just going for it. I thought it was great. So I'm just really happy about the response from tonight's show.
Mm-hmm. People were feeling like, I want to talk about it some more.
No, honestly, it was absolutely fantastic. It was a blessing to me. I think that a lot more people need to show up and come on the call. Like, I wish I could put it on blast in the South. I live in Atlanta, and I wish that more people were aware of or that they care to be interested in it, because I think it would be a great conversation.
That was you that said something about more Atlanta artists need to be on here.
Yes, calling them out. Oh. If there are any Atlanta artists that are on Twitter that are there, they absolutely need to be on here. Absolutely. Like, Crystal Wright had her class here, and I was taking Jennifer's class at the time, so I went to the rap party with Jennifer after, and she was saying something like, in Atlanta, there's like 500 to 700 movies that are filmed a year between, from big ones to small ones, and like, less than 10% use Atlanta-based artists. Why? Because the aesthetic here and the level of professionalism. That's nuts to me for that to be in your backyard.
I was going to say also, and you can add to this, JK, because you worked in Atlanta, and my sister lives there in Atlanta. But it also has a lot to do with the types of movies that's being done there. If it's something that's organized by a union, then and if the production starts somewhere else, for instance, like in L.A., they have jurisdiction all over the country. They can come into that territory and bring their own people. But when they come into our jurisdiction, we have to have some Atlanta-based people on the project, but it doesn't have to be all of them. Then there are some projects where it doesn't matter where you're from or there's no union involved and anybody can work. I can't really speak to that. I don't really know why. Like I said, I work in Atlanta a lot, but I can't say that the artists there in Atlanta are that much different from the ones here in Maryland that I work with in productions. I can't really say that they're much different than the ones that I work with in L.A., so I really don't know what the Atlanta issue really is. But if they need to be on the call, please tell them, because, that's one thing is I don't want any artist out there to be ignorant, to not know. Now, if you choose, after you've been told and people show you things, Then if you're ignorant, then that's on you. But yeah. I would hate for people to say Atlanta makeup artists aren't professional or don't know when they haven't been, taught.
Yeah. It may be some that they don't know. There are a good deal of people like the lady I was talking about earlier on that BET show. She mainly worked on videos. And that's part of the gap there. What that video transfer to television and film is different. They get away with so much stuff on video and film, and that becomes the norm for them. So even if they knew beforehand, and a lot of them don't, they just don't grasp when they transfer to television and film that you have to tone it down, change how you've been acting, just because previously you were on the T.I. set and you did Young Jeezy and you did 2 or 3, 4 other big shows, big videos, that, yeah, you're big time in that genre, but once you go to film and television, it's totally different. It's more like the corporate entity of what we do. And you don't come over there with all of that lollygagging and all that extra stuff and going to sleep like the girl that I'm talking about did on the set, like laid down on the bed in a bedroom and went to sleep.
No.
Oh, we have pictures. Denise and I have pictures. Yes. So, some of them don't get it. So some of them, they don't know. And then when it comes to the whole film thing, when it comes to these film people coming from, a lot of the time from L.A., they tend to just want to bring their people with them. They do the same thing in Tennessee. They do the same thing some of everywhere. They want to bring their people with them. They do, because of the state requirements, sometimes have to hire a local artist or two. But they try their best to get out of doing it. So that's not really why some of those people don't get on the set, because of their professionalism. It's because of the professionalism of the L.A. people. And they just want to use their folks. They want to come in town almost crewed up.
Yeah.
And they'll have 1 or 2 or 3 spots or a few spots. It may be a good deal of spots, but it won't be in the makeup department. There may only be one hair, one makeup that's local. And then the department heads and the first or keys or whatever you want to call them will possibly come from out of town also. Like the movie is getting ready to happen here. Well, the department head, the main lady is coming out of New York. The next lady is from here. But she'll only hire her friends and her buddies. That's guaranteed. I've already had a discussion with 798, with the local union here, the man that's over the local union here, and 3 or 4 other people. So she has her crew of 4 or 5 women, and they are gangster with it in Tennessee on taking over films. Like, they punk. They literally will punk a film production out of L.A. Ooh. And tell them, you can't come in here without hiring me. That's how they do it. So, and they know professionalism, but they've taken professionalism to the just straight up, I'm going to put a gun to your head, you're going to hire me. You can't come in here without hiring anybody else, because they have so many years of experience. That's what they do. And they have resumes that are enviable, that just are beautiful resumes. But the way they act and the mess they keep up on the set, I'm talking about some white ladies that have done the damn thing, and they keep up a lot of drama. So just the variety on professionalism from the bottom to the top is just varies. It's so broad. These women, I had a UPM tell me literally, I hate I ever hired these bitches.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Now, what is
it? They kept up so much money.
I've never worked on films.
The unit production manager that does some of the hiring.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. They kept up every day. It was drama. Every day they were calling him with something. Every day they needed something.
So why would it be a requirement then that they would have to fill those roles? I mean, if it's not a union-based environment, regardless of
this is a union. This is on mostly union films. This is mostly on union films that they're taking the position. And see, the thing is, some of them interview well. Some people interview well. So they know how to come in and interview.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they get in,
then they do their thing.
Yep. I guess for me, in terms of, like, what I research with unions and things that I'm learning, like, it's almost like a catch-22, because most of the unions that I see, you know, or the only one I see here in Atlanta, in order to be a member of it, you have to have had a certain amount of experience on film sets, period, or, you know, video, what have you. But in order to get that experience down here, you would have to be in the union. So it's like, you know, it one kind of fits the other before you can actually do it.
Yeah.
It is.
The only thing, I say to that is if you're interested in being in the union, then just continue working at doing that film and television and theater work, making sure you get, you know, paid work. And the only thing I can say is, you know, if it's what you're supposed to be doing, you'll get what you need, you know. And even if you don't get the number of days that you need, you'll get in eventually.
Right.
That's all I can really say because it's true. You know, when I first started, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to ever get all these days when I can't even get on a union show because I'm not in the union? You know, and it just seems like it's impossible, but it's not.
It's not. I just never tried until I worked with Denise in 08, and I finally, some people were trying to help me get in because I got done really crazy here in Tennessee on another film that I was supposed to be on because I was a director's request, and from that they tried to help me get in, and the union gave me this real runaround. And then I started makeup in 93, so I didn't get in the union until 08. No, 09. 08 is when I worked that show with Denise. And that's what gave me, like, solid proof on one show as opposed to me having to prove from a variety of shows that I had the time and the hours. So I just used that one show to get in.
And to be honest with you, JK, that's what they're really looking for. They're looking for you to do most of your time on one show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And what does that look like? What does that look like? You know, because
I did 8 weeks
teaching this stuff.
This was a 10-week show, but I did 9 weeks on it.
Wow.
And here's the other key thing I'll tell you to go along with what Janice said. And this is something that I don't know why I intuitively just thought was going to be important. I have every call sheet from 1993 to now.
Okay.
And every check stub. And every check stub.
Okay.
And you need to have that. And you need to have that.
And I just thought it was important to prove that I worked on things, and it turned out to be just that. Because when I sent my information in, I literally sent a binder that I took to Kinko's and had bound together. Because when those people previously tried to help me get in, what the union sent me was a letter saying, oh, you've done a whole bunch of work. You're going to have to prove all of this. So along with my information for that show I worked with Denise, I sent that letter behind that initial proof and said, because you all sent me this previous letter, then these other 30 pages is the proof that you asked me for. And I had notarized every call sheet and every check stub that I had ever gotten to prove to them my 5-page resume was legit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And once I did that, they couldn't deny me. I made sure I covered every little entity on that letter, and I had to go through several people to get that initial information from 798. They wouldn't send it to me.
Right.
Okay.
Because I knew somebody at the film commission, because Denise helped me get the letter. I got it between the two of them. When I called 798, they wouldn't send me the information.
Gotcha. Okay.
So just keep all of your information, you know, keep it, make you a bunk. You know, you may need to have it with your tax information or something, but make you a copy and make you a binder, make you a folder, and this is copy of the check stub, copy of the call sheet.
Okay.
If the call sheet is just an email, you make a... If the call sheet is just an email, then you copy that, do print that email out and attach it to a copy, you know, to attach a copy of it to that check stub.
All
right. Right.
And that's good too.
But when it comes to the, when it comes to the union, it can't be a you have to get paid. It can't be something you just filed
independent
and retired for.
And like
right.
Right. Right.
You have to. Yeah. You have to get paid. So it's very important to have that check stub.
So
yeah,
do you so you suggest? So basically, you know, if you're trying to, I'm asking because I do. I'm sure you guys heard working in film, Massachusetts. Everybody's been filming here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been filming in Boston, between Boston and Cape Cod, because when we got the new governor, which was black governor, first ever here,
mm-hmm.
he created a lot of tax incentives for filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually, like, I don't know if you heard about Plymouth Hollywood. There's they're building over there. That's less than a half hour from where I live. But
yeah.
It's not, like, affected, like, by traffic or anything. We've always been known, Boston's always been known for commercials. You know, they have a lot of commercial agencies where, you know, people that want to get into commercials and stuff like that, they shoot a lot of that here. So, you know, you have a lot of people that I would know, you know, just in the industry, they would kind of start over there to kind of branch out. But I, you know, I'm by the book and I always want to know, really, I make it my business to know the business. So I went to the Board of Licensure to find out, you know, from them word of mouth, what exactly does it take? And they basically told us, Massachusetts, they were like, we don't get involved in that movie making stuff. I was like, really?
Yeah.
They were like, no, but it's what you were saying. They were like, because it's too big of a headache when L.A. comes here to film their movie and they have their own people. They were like, that becomes
right.
big of a headache. So
mm-hmm.
they said, we kind of go on the honor system that they will honor that who they're hiring is a professional. They said, but we don't, there's no guidelines in Massachusetts for that. And that was pretty interesting to me that they had told me that.
Well, the International Alliance of State and Theatrical Employees, the local out of New York is who would cover the Massachusetts area.
Okay.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. So,
but it would not be your local people that cover salons and hair and
right.
stuff.
I was trying to figure out, like, what, you know, I wanted to know what was the, you know, is there a licensure issue, you know, to make sure, you know, what do you need and stuff. So I was trying to find out that because, again, everywhere you drive, especially now in Boston, somebody's filming something. You're like, oh, okay. And then I'm watching a movie. I'm like, hey, yeah, Boston's only so big. So
right.
you watch it. You're like,
it's
hey.
What you need to know is it a union product or a union project or not a union project? If
okay.
it's not a union project and you can find out any information whatsoever, then you need to go offer, you know, your services, try to get an email, try to send your resume. If you see the, what do you call it, Janice, the home base of all the base camp where all the trailers are set up, you know, when you can ask somebody. You know, maybe they'll be nice and say, yeah, production trailer is over there. And then if you can get that far, then you know, hey, I'm a makeup artist. I want to, you know, submit my resume, drop off my resume. On a union gig, it's mainly going to be union hair and makeup. But the thing will be, as they exhaust the number of people that they utilize in that area, then they will start either reaching out to the next area or the closest cities for other union people, or if they need somebody really quickly, then they might use a non-union person. They can, but they have
mm-hmm.
to do what they call an exhaustive search for available 798 members.
And I would, since you live in Boston, I would pay attention to the Massachusetts Film Office